From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Happy birthday, by the way, to Kenny Aronoff, nationally known drummer and Coast to Coast guest. Happy birthday, Kenny. Here's what's happening. Sending foreign weapons to Ukraine will lead to a global collapse, according to Russia's foreign ministry. That's what he's warning. Sergei Lavrov, Russia's foreign minister, said Western powers sending mercenaries and military equipment to the front lines would be catastrophic. Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin has demanded Ukraine recognize Russia's claim to Crimea and acknowledges two cities as independent states if the war is to end. Ukraine must also lay down their arms, he says, and distance themselves from NATO. The demands come after reports Kremlin troops are preparing for a new attempt to seize Kiev, the capital. New York State is facing increased risks of cyber attacks from Russian retaliators, while city agents have seen more breach attempts amid heightened tensions that have risen from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Let's check in with our expert on the Internet, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, how bad is this situation?
I don't really think it's all that bad at this point. If one digs down into the specifics of this story, you find out that there apparently aren't any new significant specific threats to New York City related to this. And this whole alert appears to be mostly a generalized, well, with everything going on in the world right now, especially with Russia and Ukraine, maybe this is a time state actors are going to try something. So it's a boost in alert level on that basis. And it doesn't hurt anything to be more careful, obviously. Though my view tends to be that while cyber attacks can occur at any time, smart attackers are probably going to hit when they're least expected and not when they're most expected. So for most people, they really should probably be more concerned about just the routine scams that show up in their email all the time. Use good account practices like not sharing passwords between services, not clicking links in email that you're not certain is legit, using two-factor authentication, ideally FIDO security keys, which are much more secure than the other two-factor mechanisms, and be wary but not paranoid. Now, as far as the big kinds of concerns about cyber attacks, like big power failure attacks and such that are speculated about so much, we've discussed this, and certainly these things could happen in theory, but so many of these systems and businesses have been hardened and fixed over the last few years. Certainly they're not perfect, but it's not as if the people running these systems are unaware of what the risk dynamics have become for older, unupgraded systems. So yeah, things can definitely go wrong. Targeted cyber attacks can still do a lot of damage. Though most of the cyber attacks we see now, even with the war situation, are still just kind of everyday common ransomware-type criminal activity more than anything else. So we have the vulnerabilities, but I don't really buy into the major doomsday cyber attack scenarios. That doesn't mean people shouldn't be diligent about their computer security. They obviously should stay alert. They should try to keep their systems up to date and well backed up, always very important. And that's good to do for ordinary day-to-day operations, even if there weren't cyber attack threats to also be considering.
All right, my friend, we'll check in with you later. The national average price of gasoline in the U.S. today broke the existing record, rewriting the all-time high to today's $4.10 per gallon, according to Gas Buddy, the leading fuel savings platform, saving North American drivers the most money on gas. The previous all-time high was set back in 2008, the record now, $4.63 a gallon, but in Los Angeles, it's well over $5 a gallon. My gosh. The Supreme Court is leaving in place a decision made by Pennsylvania's highest court that led to Bill Cosby's release from prison. The high court declined prosecutors' request to hear the case and reinstate Cosby's conviction. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court last year threw out Cosby's conviction, saying the prosecutor who brought the case was bound by the predecessor's agreement not to charge Cosby. Even a mild case of COVID-19 can damage the brain and affect thinking, according to scientists. They found this out in a study that highlights the illness's alarming impact on mental function. They said in some cases, COVID-19 actually shrinks the brain. What's going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Dr. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. Stephen, what do you have for us this week?
Well, hi, George. Jam-packed information as always. We begin with astronomy. And how about this? Memories of solar eclipses, future solar eclipses also in North America. George, my first total solar eclipse was actually 52 years ago, back on March 7th, 1970. That's back 52 years ago. At age 14, I joined my dad and others for what was to be a grand total solar eclipse in Florida. March 7th, 1970, as I mentioned. We got there in a town called Perry, Florida. Sad to say, we were rained out, but naturally the sky got dark. And then from then on, George, I was hooked on solar eclipses forever. So I thought I'd share some dates of future annular and total eclipses with you and the audience. Get set for a great annular solar eclipse on Saturday, October the 14th, 2023. This will be visible over a large part of the U.S., United States, Northwest, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, but in my opinion, visible best in places like Albuquerque, New Mexico. Then, a great total solar eclipse, only 177 days later, mark the date down, April the 8th, 2024. It'll best be seen in Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, Indiana, Ohio, New York, and New England. But if you miss this one, here we go, George. Mark it down, folks, August the 12th, 2045. Over much of the southwest and central U.S. Here's another outstanding one. New York City, right downtown, gets a sunrise total solar eclipse on May the 1st, 2079. That's a two-minute eclipse, so if you were standing on top of the Empire State Building, the sun would rise in totality. We move on to space. The James Webb Telescope is to view a system called TRAPPIST-1. Now with the James Webb Telescope, George, gearing up for the exploration of the universe, as we know, as early as this summer, one of the items on the agenda will be the unique seven-exoplanet system known as TRAPPIST-1. What is it? A collection of potentially habitable planets around a very cool, low-mass star 40 light-years from us. The parent star, a red dwarf, only 9% the mass of our sun, but these seven planets are all within what we call the habitable zone. So if we could journey there in our mind here, the night sky on one of these TRAPPIST planets would be like a night with a full moon glow in the sky, and you would see the other six planets. They would fill your sky. How amazing. In space, the Hubble Advanced Camera for surveys is still state-of-the-art. With all the attention now given to the James Webb Telescope, let's not forget that the Hubble Space Telescope just celebrated an anniversary with the Advanced Camera for Surveys taking some amazing pictures of the universe, peering back as far as 435,000 years after the Big Bang.
Wow.
It was installed back on March the 7th, another March 7th date, 2002, by a space shuttle service mission. Thanks, Hubble. We wrap it up naturally, George, with the live sky. The second week of March brings us a waxing moon, first quarter moon on March the 10th. The moon will be farthest from us on the 10th at apogee. And with spring less than 2 weeks away, it's time to welcome some new constellations of the spring sky. So simply look to the eastern sky at sunset for a rising constellation, Leo the Lion, and the Big Dipper, as we call it, Ursa Major, standing on its tail in the north-northeast sky at sunset. This will be followed by this orange supergiant star we call Arcturus in the northeast sky at 9 p.m. The star, that is, 36 light-years away, 20 million miles in diameter, and the Polynesian navigators of long time ago referred to this star, and I quote, as the Star of Joy. It was actually a star that was used to light up and open the 1933 Chicago World's Fair. Great information always at theskylive.com. Emails, we love them. DrSkyShow@gmail.com. Simply what? Always remember to keep your eyes to the skies. I'm your navigator on the highway to the heavens, and thank you and the listeners.
Dr. Sky, we'll talk to you next week, my friend. You might remember several years ago, we were going to do a major program on Ouija boards. We had three guests. One was for that. Another wasn't, and the one who just was right in the middle and didn't care if we did the show or not. I decided to cancel that program that night, you might remember, because a lot of people were emailing me and they were really concerned. Well, we're going to have a Ouija board program coming up in just a moment. Two special guests. The first, Rick Schreck, joins us. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Special guest for you right now, a true Jersey Devil, Rick Schreck, is the owner of the House of 1,000 Tattoos in Middlesex, New Jersey, and has been a professional tattoo artist for just under 30 years, serving as vice president for the Talking Board Historical Society, Rick has been what we would say obsessed or possessed by all things Ouija since 1992. Creating Talking Board since 2004, he has accomplished feats like making a Ouija bed of nails, building a giant interactive Ouija board to hang on the front of his house, converting his 1989 hearse into a Ouija board, and most recently, listen to this, making the largest Ouija board the world has ever seen, 72 feet by 44 feet, featured in Ripley's Believe It or Not. Rick, why did you make it that big?
Size matters. How you doing? Yeah, I just wanted to make something that would be impressive to my kids, and it was a fun publicity stunt for the tattoo shop, and I don't know. That's why.
And you called it what, Ouija-zilla?
Ouija-zilla, yes.
Has anything bad ever happened with you because of the Ouija boards?
The Ouija boards themselves, I wouldn't say anything bad. Sometimes weird things happen that may be a little bit unexplainable. You know, with Ouija-zilla itself, there was a time when I got a shipment of wood. You know, the panels are 70 pounds apiece.
That's huge. Huge.
Yeah, 4x8 plywood, and there's 99 of them. And the guys used to deliver them to me, you know, 10 to 20 at a time. And I would have to flip through them and inspect them because they were like, you know, some of them were damaged. And they brought 10 to me one time, and I had them in the hallway in my tattoo shop, and I was flipping through them to see if they were damaged, and I pulled them too far to myself, and the center of gravity came at me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I got pinned to the wall. I had 10 panels. I took it to the gut, so we're talking 700 pounds to the stomach.
You're glad it didn't slice you in two.
I know. Well, you know, if I get killed by the world's largest Ouija board, it would have been an epic tale to tell forever I wouldn't know about.
You'd be a lead on my show.
Right. I'd become an urban legend like Candyman or something.
Now, where do you keep a 72-foot by 44-foot Ouija board?
Well, it's just a stack of 99 sheets, so it's in a warehouse that my friend owns.
Okay, so you put it together, you take it apart, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. How did you get the name Ouija-zilla?
I'm a huge Godzilla fan from way back, so I wanted something, you know, monstrous, and Godzilla is the king of all monsters, so I said this would be the king of all talking boards, and that's how it came from.
In a few moments, Robert Rich is going to join us, who heads up, of course, the Talking Board Society, Historical Society. How'd you get involved in that organization?
Merch and I have been friends forever, and you know, we were just some collectors that talked about Ouija boards all the time, and Merch just started coming up with these crazy ideas to build monuments and put in headstones, and it really just started organically.
Well, good for you. But you're not scared of the Ouija board at all?
No, not in the slightest.
God, we've had so many people that are just so concerned about it. I don't like them because I just think, not because I particularly am scared of it, but I think that if you don't know what you're doing, you could open up a portal to the other side. Do you think that's possible?
I know I sound crazy, but I've always been hoping for that. I mean, that's what was the inspiration for collecting them to begin with. So I was hoping if there was anything to them being haunted or portals or whatever, I would just keep buying them until I found that right one. And I'm a couple hundred deep in my collection, and I haven't found that right one yet.
You have a couple hundred Ouija boards?
Yeah, and Merch got 1,000.
Yeah, he'll be coming in just a moment. Then both of you will join us next hour for phone calls.
Yeah.
Any stories you can share with us, Rick?
Well, you know what? There's one thing that I haven't really shared much publicly about Ouija-zilla. As a goof, I thought it would be funny to mark the back of the panels because I had to number them all. You know, you have 99 panels there. So I thought it would be funny to go into, you know, the book, it's called the Goetia, you know, it has all the demon magic.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be hysterical to take those 72 demons and put each corresponding demon on the back of each panel on that giant Ouija board. So panel one is demon one, panel two is demon two. And one night I was here really late by myself, and I was putting all the sigils on the back of the panels and numbering each one. And, you know, my wife thought something was wrong with me when I came home. I thought maybe I was breathing too many paint fumes. I don't know, because I was in the garage, you know.
That's conceivable.
Yeah,
Yeah, and then I came home and like it was the weirdest thing. I was really spacey, but I wasn't talking right, and I kept telling my wife that something bad was happening. And I walked into my bathroom, and I would love it if your listeners had any ideas as to what the heck this was. But I walked into my bathroom to just go splash water on my face, and my shower actually was, it looked like a fish tank with no glass.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it looked like a cube of water floating off my bathtub, and I just stood there staring at it. And I asked my wife, did you see this? And she thought I was hallucinating. She's like, you're crazy. I don't know what that is. But I've been trying to figure out the connection between those demon sigils and water. You know, maybe it had nothing to do with nothing, but it was a weird thing to happen.
Besides that, has anything happened to anybody you know with Ouija boards?
No, other than people getting spooked out because it moved a little bit. Nothing,
right.
Nothing
really bad. You would have no problems with kids playing Ouija board games?
No, I have three kids, and my daughter Samara, my youngest.
Yeah.
We took her baby birth announcements on a Ouija board, so I mailed them out.
No way.
Yeah.
And how old is she?
She's going to be 18 next month.
Oh, okay. Wow, she's growing up. She's growing up. Is she into Ouija boards at this point?
Yeah, well, they all grew up around it, so the whole family loves the Ouija boards.
Well, you do bring up something interesting, Rick, and that is, if you don't think there's anything bad about it, it's just like a game or a toy.
Right.
And probably nothing will happen. But if you're freaked out about it, if you think demons are going to come through, something could happen. Would you agree with that?
I believe that we all are our own worst enemies sometimes. We attract negativity and positivity to us. I believe that if you had a beautiful black cat and you just love that cat, nothing's going to happen.
I agree. So you've got all these Ouija boards, you store them up, and what is the oldest Ouija board that you have?
The oldest one I have, I actually have a Kennard board. It's stamped 1891.
Wow, that's a classic.
Yeah.
What's it made with, wood or cardboard?
Yeah, it's made of multiple layers of wood, and it has two backing, it's almost like straps that hold it together. It's the only board that was made that way. It almost looks like a box top for a crate.
Wow, because I'm not sure they even had cardboard in those days, did they?
I don't know.
That's fantastic. Your websites, of course, we've got them linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You use a strange middle name once in a while called Amortis.
Amortis, yeah.
And so if you talk about your name really fast, it's Rigor Mortis.
Yes.
Shrek.
That was given to me by a very good friend of mine, Tato. He passed away a year ago. He was this awesome biker dude that used to hang out in my tattoo shop. You know, we used to do martial arts together. And one day he came in here. You know, he's this big, you know, bad dude. But, like, all the things I'm into would make him, you know, he's like, wow, you're kind of weird, dude. Well, I'm going to start calling you Ricker. And I go, Ricker, why? He goes, Rigor Mortis.
I love it.
It stuck.
I love it. How many tattoos do you think you've given people, Rick, in your career?
Oh, thousands. I've been tattooing forever.
Wow. I don't have any tats, but do they hurt when you do it?
Yeah. Yeah, but in a good way.
Do you have to numb the skin or anything like that?
No. That's been trending lately, but every time anybody's ever come in and brought that stuff, I find it to be a huge waste of money because they stay numb for 10 minutes, and it makes the skin weird so that it doesn't really take the ink right.
What keeps the ink inside the skin for almost the end of time?
Well, the pigments we use, you know, like all the colors, they're actually powdered pigments. So they're in a liquid carrier, like distilled water and witch hazel. And once that stuff gets absorbed in your body, it leaves behind that powder, which is trapped in your dermis.
And the name of the tattoo show, company you have is what, the House of the Thousand Tattoos? Is that the name of it?
Yep, House of a Thousand Tattoos, named after Rob Zombie's movie House of a Thousand Corpses.
I've got a friend of mine in St. Louis. He's a personal trainer and does very well for himself. But he's got tattoos all over his body. I mean, his back, his front, his arms, his chest, his legs. His whole body's a tattoo.
Sounds like a cool dude.
it's kind of trendy, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, now more than ever, yeah.
All right, well, we're going to come back with you at the top of the hour, Rick, and we're going to take phone calls with you. And in a moment, Robert Murch joins us. Robert, of course, heads up the Talking Board Historical Society. as we continue talking about Ouija boards. And we'll get Robert's take on Ouija boards as well. And then in our second hour, we'll take your phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. We shall be right back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Robert Murch back with us. He was with us almost 7 years ago, and we'll call him Murch. He's the world's foremost collector, historian, and expert on Ouija and talking boards, and also serves as the chairman of the board for the Talking Board Historical Society. His relationship with the Ouija began after watching the movie Witchboard in 1986, and a century after the talking board made its debut. Murch purchased his first antique Ouija board back in 1992, became quite obsessed with unraveling the mystery of its origins. Since then, he has devoted his career, his life, to researching the history of the Ouija board and its founders. With Murch also traveling the world to track down descendants of all those involved with the introduction of the mystifying oracle. Hey, Murch, welcome back. It's been a while.
How are you doing? It's great to be here.
It's great for you, too. Great for me. It's great that you're still around after dealing with the Ouija board.
I think I saw you, last time I saw you, I think, was in Boulder filming for Beyond Reality.
Beyond Belief show. Yeah.
Beyond Belief show, exactly. And sorry about that. And I think that was the last time I saw you, and that was right after a back surgery. So it was good to see you then. It's good to be here now.
Good. How are you feeling?
Better, you know. Backs are tough, but
tough surgery indeed. Well, take us back to the beginning of your relationship with the Ouija board. What was it that captured your attention?
Yeah, you know, I was raised in an Orthodox home, so a Jewish Orthodox home, and anyone who's raised in Orthodoxy, all this mysticism, paranormal, God, all of this is kind of your reality. It's just baked into how you're raised. And it means it's basically not scary because you're exposed to this at a very young age, the belief that other things exist other than what we see and hear. And so I think I was just open to it. And then I had kind of been around, seeing the Ouija board a little bit, but it was really Kevin Tenney's 1986 film Witchboard. I was 13 years old, and my grandmother, who was Orthodox Jew, she snuck me into the movie theater.
Oh my God!
To see this movie. I know, it's crazy because she didn't have to. She was an adult. She probably could have just paid for me to get in, but I don't know. This was like a bonding moment. She snuck me in, and she liked paranormal movies and supernatural stuff that my mom and parents didn't want me to watch and see. Of course, that's what grandparents are great for. So I saw this movie, and I really, it didn't take long before I noticed, even at 13, that the movie theater was very polarized, that this thing made of plastic and cardboard was scaring people or making people laugh. Like, why could be, you know, how could this be so scary, or how can you not see that this is scary? And that kind of stuck with me leading up until I went to college. And I went to University of New Hampshire, wonderful college. And I was in a quad with three other roommates. And they wanted to go to a fraternity. And I knew that if I went to a fraternity, I wouldn't finish college. I wouldn't graduate. That was a bad, that would be a bad decision for me. So I decided to stay in the school part and help them, and then I could go to the parties. And one of the things they needed for their rushing for the fraternity was an old Ouija board. It was a treasure hunt.
Yeah.
And, you know, any New Englander who's, you know, spent, who's grown up in New England, basically, you go to flea markets and yard sales, and, you know, this is what you do. You go antiquing on the weekends. So I knew I'd seen them. And I, you know, came home for the weekend to Boston and hit all the antique stores and flea markets and yard sales and picked a bunch up. And when they returned them to me, there were 10, and they were all different. And I just thought, wait a minute, isn't there only one Ouija board? Isn't that like the only thing that I'd ever heard of is just a Ouija board?
Sure.
And yet, there were all these different makers and manufacturers and names. And so I went to, you'll know what I'm talking about. Hopefully your listeners do too. But I went to a physical building called the library where there were real books inside. And
I remember those.
I remember they were fun. And I looked up the Ouija board. I wanted to know who was behind it and, you know, where did it come from? And every encyclopedia, whether it was Funk and Wagnalls, it didn't matter. They all said that the Ouija board came from someplace different. And I thought, wait a minute. How can something that everyone knows what it is when you say it, most people have a story, we don't know where it comes from? And that really sent me off into this kind of lifelong obsession and possession of the Ouija board to really figure out its roots and trace everything about it, what people believe, what's fact, where did it come from, who were the people involved, and really just kind of trying to dig that up. And in the process of that, it caused us to form the Talking Board Historical Society, a nonprofit, in 2014 that's dedicated to preserving this history so it doesn't get lost again.
How far back, Mark Murch, were you able to track the origin of the Ouija board?
Well, Ouija is interesting because, Ouija is a trademark that's been in continuous use since 1890. Ouija is a talking board. That's the class of these games. So talking boards existed before Ouija or Ouija. It's just the most popular. So 1890 is for Ouija. If we go back in talking boards, there's a couple of markers. And 1886 is another marker. That's when the use of these that were happening in the spiritualist communities all over America basically got picked up by a story in the Associated Press and reprinted everywhere, in London, in Boston, in Sydney. And all of these stories were basically telling people how to make the board. What were they? How to make them? And, you know, what to do with them? What were they used for? And if we go back a little further, the 1870s are where we see devices or spirit communication devices that resemble the talking board, but not exactly the way we see it today with a planchette, the movable piece right on a board that has letters, numbers, and words. And if we go back even further, really, they were close. If we say that 1848 was the birth of modern spiritualism in America, then the Fox sisters had it real close because they were investigating this haunt that was happening inside their house. They were hearing these knocks, and they were responding. So they felt that there was an intelligent response, like one knock, yes, two knocks, no. And these girls felt like they were getting answers. And so really quickly, they realized that saying one knock is A, two knock is B, three knock is C. This is long when you have 26 letters, and then your numbers. So they really quickly started putting alphabet cards out in numbers and words and using their finger or a pencil and pointing to the letters or numbers or words. And if there was a knock, that was the correct letter, word, or number spelling out there. So they were close, but then all of these other wonderful, amazing spirit communication devices came about. And it really obscured the talking board. And it really kind of comes back as the planchette, which was a separate spirit communication device, really merges. That instead of people using a planchette to place their hand on and ask the spirits what they want, a planchette would spell it out by using a pencil as one of the legs, pointing it out and spelling it. So that would then become the pointer in a talking board. And when that happened, it was like magic.
Birch, what moves the planchette?
That's a great question. And I actually think the answer depends on who's playing and what's really going on around the room, what the history is, kind of even what's going on in the days of those people. There's basically three ways that most people believe is happening when you sit down at the Ouija board. And the first is what scientists have been calling an automatic response for a long time, automatism. And basically, it's the belief that these small movements in your hands and the fact that you want the board to work cause you to cause this trick in your head that you don't know you're answering it, you're pushing it. So you ask a question because you want to.
Right. You can't even feel that you're moving it.
Exactly. You swear you can't move it. You would swear in a Bible you are not moving it. And yet scientists can show that sometimes you are.
And you would probably pass a lie detector test if they asked if you were moving it, because you really don't know. It's a reflex,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly. And people, you know, who you can't, unless you've done it, you don't understand it, right? Because most people say, wait a minute, if I'm moving, I would know it. But it's so slight and it's so small, and you're paying such close attention that when you sit down at the Ouija board and you place your fingertips on the planchette, time slows down. Everything gets quiet. Everyone's focused on it. You can hear the movement of the felt feet on the planchette, and you know, you can feel it moving. And all of that really takes your focus away from you might be doing it yourself. And not to mention, you know, your friend might be pushing it just to be a jerk, right? Someone could be doing it just to have fun with you.
Absolutely.
That's
you can't rule that out.
All right. It depends on the friends you have. I know the friends I have, some would push it. But then we have another thing that there are psychics who believe that there's a form of telepathy that's going on, that you're starting to read each other's minds. And that's how you're getting answers that you might, how would you know that about me if you're a stranger? And then we have what spiritualists were talking about back in the 1800s and people have been talking about throughout time. What if when you sit at a spirit communication device like the Ouija board and you ask if anyone's there and you part the veil, what happens if when you use the board, a portal is opened up and you're allowed to communicate with something not physically in the room the way we see everyone else?
Which I believe happens. I think that's a good possibility.
I think anything's possible because we're dealing with humans. And when we deal with the human mind and the brain, I think the only thing I always like to point out is there's nothing inherently mystical about cardboard and plastic. The reason the Ouija board is so special is because we give it power. We believe that when something goes wrong, it's the Ouija board's fault.
Can it be dangerous, Murch?
I think the Ouija board can be dangerous if people don't pay attention. And that one of the big things is if they don't, play with it in a way that's going to get them in trouble. You know, first of all, what is it you're trying to accomplish, right? Why are you sitting down at the Ouija board? And making sure you ask questions that you're reasonably trying to get, you know, writing down your questions ahead of time, right? Coming up with 10 questions that you might want to use if you sit down and play the Ouija board. And then maybe playing it with, say, four people or more, because one, it works faster when you first start, and two, it's a little more fun. And so the more people you have, the quicker it will work until the more you sit at it happens. And then also putting in place some things for you that make you feel better. Because again, this is about belief. If you believe you're going to open up a portal and cross the veil, you are. That's what's going to happen. That's going to be your experience. And so if those things make you nervous or if you've had bad experiences, some people pray, some people imagine a white light, some people follow certain rules or Ouija-stitions that make them feel better. It's a really interesting thing because a lot can happen depending on how you approach the board.
Can some people, Murch, get reckless with the board?
Yeah, I think, you know, part of the problem and I work on movies and TV shows, so I might be part of the problem as well. But one of the things we often depict in movies, going, you know, all the way back to, say, The Exorcist in 1973, is we often show young people playing the Ouija board, kind of not knowing what they're doing, get in trouble, play the Ouija board by itself,
yep.
You know, another Ouija-stition that people believe, and then get into trouble. And they get reckless because, you know, to them it's a game.
Don't they say the little boy from The Exorcist, the original kid from Baltimore, was playing with a Ouija board when all this mess happened in his life?
They say that, after the fact, much later, that it's not actually part of the story for some time, and there's no actual proof or diary references or any records of anyone saying that he played with the Ouija board.
Makes a better story, though, doesn't it?
It does, and it's also likely. I mean, it's in the 1940s. You know, it's the Ouija board is a huge boom. It's really popular around wartime, and so the fact that he might have been playing with his aunt with the Ouija board, it's entirely possible. But like you said, it makes a better story. And stories have power. And if people who've seen The Exorcist, the movie, and then who also have delved into it deeper and really gotten into the true story of The Exorcist, we know that it's scary. And if someone tells you that playing with the Ouija board alone could cause you to be possessed by a demon, that's pretty powerful. You know,
it's
you're
huge.
Planting the seed of something really bad that could happen. And so, again, belief, if you've opened the door to that, you know, that's where things can get reckless. And that's why I say if you're going to sit down at it, you really think about what it is you're doing. Why are you using it? Have you lost someone? Are you just interested in the unknown and the other side? You know, what is it you're trying to accomplish? Really coming up with a plan. And I think, you know, a good friend of mine also at the Talking Board Historical Society is Karen Dahlman.
Uh-huh. Karen's a good person. She's been on our program before. Merch, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to bring Rick Schreck back with you. Both of you will take calls next.